Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. Wow, what an episode. I feel smarter after this past hour with our guest. Wow, we have the one and only Kevin Ford with us today. Who
yes.
is he, Anna?
Kevin Ford is a cybersecurity expert. He works for the state of North Dakota. That's ND. I met him when my Twitter was hacked. So we're going to talk all about that situation that went down. We're going to talk about what Kevin does for a living. And then we're also going to give you guys tips and tricks on how to protect yourself online. Wow, this is like NPR, baby.
Yep.
Tips and tricks.
I mean, you maybe were surprised about the white name and the white guy in the screenshot. But you know what? There's a reason for it. And we get into it in this episode. So don't go anywhere.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello, 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 Anna.
Hi, Shireen.
You're not matching my energy right now.
Sorry. I was writing the timestamp down of when we started.
No, it's okay. I'm kidding. This is an episode I've been very curious about.
It's not going to be a typical episode that you guys are used to.
I mean, we were just talking about this right before we started. I guess Matt Lieb has already taken the award for the first cis white guy to ever be on our podcast. And I'll go on record on saying this. He scammed his way in because we wanted his girlfriend Fran, you know? So, but our next guest, not next, the only guest today is someone that really helped Anna out with something. And we're going to talk all about it.
Yeah, I think this guest's experience is very interesting to me because I think we can all learn from it and use it ourselves. And it's true, Shireen and I, after this episode, will also be cybersecurity experts. And so will all of you. That's how this goes.
That's all we want.
Yeah. And so our guest, who I'm about to bring out. What am I?
Where are we?
This is a podcast. Sorry. Bring on. They are Zeitgang. And so to give some context, I was hacked and I reached out on the, I went against all my normal instincts, which was to post on the Daily Zeitgeist Reddit, subreddit, if you will, which let me tell you, I wasn't going to do it, but old Miles of Gray said, do it. there's someone out there who can help you. He knew. He's like, I posted about my cat's diarrhea. And within seconds, someone's like, this is what you need to feed your cat to get rid of diarrhea. So
that's hilarious.
Trust me, someone out there has got to help you. And so I was like, fuck it, Miles. If I get attacked, I'm coming for you. And it turned out this person responded and then was my therapist, my expert, my best friend through this. Truly the person I probably spoke to the most. Didn't even talk to my parents, I think, for like 5 days because I was like, I have real problems called Twitter. So I wanted to bring him on the show. And yes, it's true. He's a white guy. Okay, whatever. We're allowed to have them on if they're important, kind of. I mean, Matt Leib's important, but whatever. This person's a little bit more important. Sorry.
I mean, okay, let's not compare
here. Let's just say, what has Matt Leib done? Comedy? Okay. Actually, he's great.
He stood up for Palestine as a Jewish man.
I'm giving him shit. But this guest is actually a cybersecurity expert, and he does a lot of really great stuff. So I am happy to welcome Kevin Ford onto our show.
Woo.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey. Hi. Thank you. Thanks, Anna. Thanks, Shireen. It's a pleasure to be here. And I'd like to say, yes, I'm Zeitgang, but I'm also, I don't know, EA gang. Is that? I love your show. So, you know, it's not just Zeitgang I listen to. I love your show, and I love
God,
the
effect
I get from it. So
you're thank now you. Brown gang. Is that what our show is?
No, that sounds like poop. So
we're brown gang. We're very poop positive here.
No, I mean, I do love to poop, but stay regular, drink some water, fiber. But we have to get a cute name for our fan base. Hey, fans out there, brainstorm.
What do you guys call yourselves?
What are your suggestions?
And it's crazy. We're like over like 190 episodes in, have no idea.
Oh,
we're
well over 200 were the bonus ones.
Oh, you're right. We have no idea.
I did count it the other day for something else I was doing because I'm neurotic, but I think it's like 240 something total.
Oh, yeah. We don't know anything. We don't plan well. Kevin, can you give us some background on what you do, like who you are, and why you felt the need to respond to my Reddit plea?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So my name's Kevin Ford, and I currently serve as the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of North Dakota, which is quite a bit colder than where you are now. As you're listening to this, we're in the middle of probably a national cold snap. And so it's very, very cold here. We're at the center of that. But so I do cybersecurity. I'm in charge of the cybersecurity program for the entire state. And for those of you who are probably thinking North Dakota, they're, you know, just this little rinky dinky state out in the Midwest, that's flyover territory. Let me drop some knowledge on you. We actually have one of the largest state networks in the nation. And that's because internet and the ability to connect to the internet is really, really important for farmers. It's important for rural people. And so we actually run a statewide network that connects every K-12 institution, every county, every city, and higher education, as well as all the state government computers together, which actually makes us one of the larger networks in the nation. So if you compare that to maybe industry or something like that, we're in probably close to a Fortune 50 company as far as the size of our network. And so it's a very, very large job, and I'm very pleased to do it to protect the people of North Dakota.
Wow. A Fortune 50. I've never heard that. I also don't really know what a Fortune 500 is.
No, same. I've heard that phrase so many times, and I check out.
So and if you're checking out, that's I'll be honest, that's kind of where I was a few years ago, right? I was working cybersecurity in industry, just grinding in the salt mine, and you know, I kind of thought to myself, you know, there must be something more, I guess, important for me to do with cybersecurity. And so that's why I started looking at making the move, making the transition to the public sector, to protecting people rather than just, you know, company profits and that sort of thing. So you know, that's really been my motivation since I moved. I really think that cybersecurity is going to be one of the defining issues in the next decade to two decades.
Definitely.
Here. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot to be said about it, both politically, as well as, you know, operationally and within the business world. There's also a political bent to this. There's also things that people need to understand around the importance of preserving our voices and preserving, you know, the channel of information on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, right. No, you're completely right. We don't really realize just how much of ourselves is on the internet at any given time. And I'm a big environmentalist, and like going paperless kind of means everything has to be digital. So you don't really realize how much accumulates and how important everything is on that is online or even on your computer that's not necessarily online, but probably easily accessible. Mm-hmm. And when you got hacked, Anna, I could only imagine. I mean, like, it's happened to so many people, but you feel so vulnerable. It's just like, it's infuriating that it happens, but I'm glad that we can potentially have tools and we can figure out ways to not be as vulnerable. Susceptible to the people that will always be shitty out there.
Right. And something you said to me, Kevin, which has stuck with me since you've said it to me, honestly, is how there's like forces at play trying to silence progressive voices. Mm-hmm. So like when they get the opportunity to, you know, they do it. And that's kind of like what we're fighting against in a way as well, to also continue having a voice in the movement and continuing to push forward, even though they're trying to silence us. Guess what? It won't work, motherfuckers. Because I've got Kevin! They're going to come for me. But no, I'm curious, what got you into cybersecurity? Like, what was your intro to that?
Sort of some of what I kind of just elaborated on, right? I really do think that the information flow, the flow of information worldwide, is one of the most important assets that we have,
right,
to battle things, you know, battle racism, battle a lot of the fights that are worth having center around information. And if you think the information is worth having, then it's also worth protecting the channel of information, the mm-hmm. sources of information, and the voices that provide us that information. And so that's really kind of what got me into it. That's the high-minded ideal.
Yeah.
Though, you know, the truth of the matter is it is right now, cybersecurity is just nationally a grind, right? There are mm-hmm. so many cybersecurity positions, so many open positions for cybersecurity around the world, in governments, in organizations, and so few of us. It's something I'm trying to actively evangelize, right? Those high-minded ideals are great, but also, you know, the more practical things, like let's not have bank accounts be hacked, or let's try to avoid some of these major hacks where people's social security numbers and personal information is leaked. You know, I think is also equally as viable a motivation, and so all of those things are important to me. And it's important to me that, you know, me as an evangelist, I get on as many different, you know, channels as possible to evangelize the importance of cybersecurity to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, when you were young, did you have any sense of this when you were growing up?
No, not at all. You know, when I go and I talk to educators and try to explain to them, hey, this is important, why, you know, it's important to have cybersecurity. It's important to, you know, log your records in this system in this way, because now more than ever, these things are being exposed on the internet, and we want to protect the children's and the students' data. The thing I open with is, you know, I'm a failed teacher. The hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life was actually try to teach. So when I couldn't hack it as a teacher, then I pivoted into cybersecurity, because that was a new field at the time. But no, growing up, I always thought I wanted to be a music teacher, and so that's what I pursued first. And this is kind of a career change for me now that I'm a little older. You know, I've been doing it 15 to 20 years now, give or take what experience you count as cybersecurity. Different people would say that's not cybersecurity, that is. But I've been working with information security for about 20 years now, and really got in kind of as it was just forming as a discipline. But growing up, it was it was not something on anyone's radar.
I mean, I think you're definitely still a teacher in your own right, you know? Like, I think that you're, I mean, you've taught Anna so many things. You're teaching so many people ways to really understand. I mean, the internet makes it so easy for us to give all our information away. It's on purpose. It's there because brands are getting your information. It's just a capitalist scam just to it's to understand demographics and to basically fishing for your information. It's purposely easy because that's what capitalism wants. That's what the government wants. So to really understand why it's so easy and to combat it and intelligent ways, I think is really important. And so I think I'm glad that you made the pivot because not a lot of people really have a grasp of just how much is out there. And even if you don't get hacked, so much of your information is still being used for something.
Yeah. If I could pull the thread of the term you used, capitalist scam, I think that's a way a lot of people really feel about, you know, how they're interacting with big tech. And I know right now, moving into the spring, a lot of, for instance, states are having their legislative sessions. I know we are here in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of bills around you know, how big tech interacts with citizens, so on mm-hmm. and so forth, brought from both sides of the house with different motivations around that. But I do think we are seeing gradual improvement, not as fast as I would like, but I do think we are seeing gradual improvement from technology companies. And it's largely being forced by government. But I think there is, you know, some starting to be some understanding that, you know, privacy is something that's important to their customers. And so for those of you in California, you have a privacy regulation that's really changing the way big tech's looking at how they, what information they collect, how they can collect it, so on and so forth. In Europe, we have GDPR, which is a privacy, you know, regulation. So if you're a company in America doing business with people's data from Europe, that's changing the way, you know, information is being collected and stored and what information is being collected and stored. So we're kind of at this crux of you know, this pivot point where, you know, it used to be the Wild West in the early 2000s. And now I see things maturing a little bit. So, mm-hmm. you know, I feel frustrated by a lot of the same things I think, most consumers feel frustrated by, but I also want to give credit where credit's due. And there has been some improvement. And I would, you know, if I can use this as a pulpit to encourage tech companies to continue to improve and continue to treat privacy as a discipline that's important, I'd like to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to know that we're at least, even if it seems at a snail pace or very small, at least we're headed in the right direction. At least a lot of companies are understanding the urgency of protecting our information. So that's good to hear from someone on the inside that it doesn't look as bleak as I imagined it to.
Yeah. And sometimes it can feel very bleak. And yeah.
It's nice to know people like you exist because sometimes like outside the bubble, you're like, these people, like, I don't know if they're just saying things to say things. I don't know if they actually care, you know, because, you know, with the Facebooks, and the Instagram and Facebook, technically the same, but like companies like that and Twitter, like literally Twitter, like trying to connect with anyone, like you're like, this is just like, it's all robots being like, we care about you. Stay tuned. And you're like, this is bullshit. Like, no, who works there? And you're like, I don't trust anyone because I don't see a face or like anyone who's saying anything to me that like is relatable or like they care or if they're just putting out press releases so they don't have to get regulated by the government. Like, it's all feels such like bullshit. And then you're like, I recently, this is kind of an aside, but I was watching this is truly an aside, the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City reunion. And I learned one of the women who the whole time I was like, how is she so rich? She doesn't look like she does anything. And then I learned she like created one of those companies that sells algorithms to like hear you and then give you advertisements for like what you want. And I was like, oh, you're oh my God, you're the evil, like you are the problem. That's you made, you would live in a beautiful ski chalet looking ass house in Salt Lake City. Like that, you paid for that with our stealing our information and then selling it back to us basically. And I was like, where did you come from? Like, how do you even get into anything like that? And so that was like a really wild moment for me where I was like, oh my God, trust no one. No one cares. So it is actually nice to know that you do care. There are people out there who work in this industry that are trying to protect us and aren't Jen Shaw and aren't just on Real greedy Housewives.
After themselves, individualists kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a dark world. Well, let's take a quick commercial break and then we'll come back and I'll tell you guys
the story of my hacking.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
All right, we are back. We are back with cybersecurity expert Kevin Ford.
Can't wait to share the nitty-gritties of this drama.
Nitty-gritty. All right, I'm going to just give a quick rundown of what happened. It feels like it took a month to go down. It happened in 4 days, basically. So I'm sitting in a backyard in Northern California, sitting at a bonfire. I'm surrounded by like three friends that I spent New Year's with, including my boyfriend. And a little past midnight, I'm like looking at my phone. I see a Twitter that has my phone. I don't even know which, because I'm logged into like show Twitters and stuff. You know, I think I was on Ethnically Ambiguous's Twitter, which I didn't even realize at the time. But I'm looking at the feed and I see my picture with a random thing. And I was like, weird, did someone steal my photo and is pretending to be me? And then, of course, like I'm sober because I don't really drink. So I may have been like a little high, but like other than that, I was whatever, pretty much in my right mind. And then it just starts to click where I'm like, no, that's my Twitter. And then I look at my sign-ins. I was like, my sign-ins, God, my Twitter was hacked. And then I'm like, well, let's see if I can change the password. I can't. My email has been changed. And then that's when everyone starts calling and texting me to let me know my Twitter is hacked, which I'm like, yeah, I know, I know, I know. And they're like, do something about it. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? All I can do is just continue to report myself. So I'm just asking everyone to report it. And then my friend Arden Marine calls me. She's like, I'm going to connect you with my publicist. And her publicist is a pretty big publicist. She's also like Tom Hanks' publicist. So she connects me. And so this publicist is like, I'll reach out to Twitter for you. And I'm like, okay, cool. Of course, it's New Year's. It's literally like past midnight. It's kind of a lost cause at this point. And so I don't sleep all night. Because I'm posting about being hacked, I get all these randos tweeting at me like, contact this person on Instagram. They're a hacker. They can get it back for you. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm not trying to contact random hackers. Like, what is going on? And so basically, days go by. Or not days. What? I keep saying days like it was days. Maybe like hours go by. I post on this the Reddit. Kevin responds to me. We start an email correspondence where I'm explaining what went down. You're kind of like walking me through everything. And so I also at this point have asked iHeart to reach out because I'm like, hello, you're a giant media company. You don't know anyone at Twitter. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. So they're reaching out to Twitter for me. Again, it's the holiday weekend. Like, no one's responding. So I'm talking to Kevin. I'm talking to iHeart. I'm talking to this publicist. And then randomly I'm texting my friend Nora, who's a lawyer. And I'm like telling her like, oh, you know anyone at Twitter? And she's like, no, what happened? Then I tell her what happens. And she's like, okay, well, my girlfriend literally works with Human Rights Twitter. And it sounds like you're being doxxed. To also give some context, they had released my phone number, my email address, my known passwords. And then so all that stuff's on my Twitter page now, which I'm getting random texts from Zeitgang being like, hey, Anna, just letting you know your Twitter is hacked. And I'm like, what the don't fucking text. I'm also just like angry. So I'm like, okay, you don't need to text me. Like, respect my privacy. And so that's all going on. So my friend Nora is like, well, you're being doxxed. So I guess her girlfriend takes her phone away from her and starts talking to me directly. Shout out Paloma, who is literally like, I will reach out to Human Rights Twitter because this is not okay. And I'm like, please, I will take anything. And also shout out to Matt Lieb, who reached out to his friend who worked at Twitter as well. So a lot of people were coming through for me. And then based on my understanding, based off what Kevin has told me, because I know nothing, when they use harsh language, like they were dropping racial slurs, they were talking shit to all my followers. They were like retweeting mm-hmm. people and being like, die. Like crazy, crazy yeah. things. Where I'm like, whoa.
They were in my DMs, remember?
That's right. They were also posting DMs between me and Lacey Mosley, which like...
Mm-hmm.
The DMs were not like incriminating at all. Like, we were just like talking about a tweet we thought was funny. And I'm like, that's yeah. what you chose? I'm sure I've
they
been
did
talking
ask me,
shit.
I think they asked me to send a picture of my tits.
Yeah.
I think it was something crude along those lines. But it was coming from you. Like, yeah. Obviously they were hacked. You were hacked. And it was just so strange because it was like, I think there were two messages. One where they asked me about for my tits. And then another where they were like, I'm going to release some DMs or something. And I was like, there's nothing here. I like scrolled up in our DMs. I was like, did we talk shit? It's like, no. Like,
no, because I don't like talk shit in my DMs. That's like, yeah. you know, I keep that for Zoom, for my yeah. podcasts. But yeah, so he's like releasing random DMs that like, they're not incriminating. Like, I'm not saying anything. But anyway, so yeah, I guess using harsh language indicates that they have access to the account and are willing to sell. Is that correct?
Yeah. So one of the things that happens when they take over your account is they want to do two things. And now this was actually really interesting. Something I learned when I was doing the research on this, Anna, was that one of the things that these guys really like is they like Twitter accounts that have only four characters or four letters in it. They call them OG Twitter accounts, right? Uh-huh. Or Twitter accounts that have a picture, a profile picture that's a GIF, right? One uh-huh. of the mm-hmm. pictures on it. And by having those, they can kind of prove to, I guess, their friends that, you know, hey, I'm cool. I hacked, I hacked this because you can't get them anymore, right? And mm-hmm. so you have to hack to get them. So that was the marketplace that was being, I guess, advanced by your particular hack. And so mm-hmm. the hacker, and I don't know how much I ever told you about the hacker. I had some conversations with him.
He right, was right.
And I won't say his name because I don't want his name because I don't want him to get famous or
yeah, fuck him.
Dox him. That wouldn't be appropriate. But he was some Australian gamer kid who was trying to finance his way into professional esports by just hacking people. But he was wow. he was selling these four character and GIF based accounts, and so you were his billboard because you had I believe what at the time 13,500 different. So two things can happen when they go after I would say maybe big fish accounts like that. The first is that they'll use it as a billboard and they'll say, you know, they'll blow it up. They'll say vulgar things. They'll shock everyone. And that's to prove to the people who would potentially buy it that they actually own it. Right. Yeah. So if they're acting in a way that doesn't jive with who you are and how you've acted in the past, then everyone can see that you've been hacked, and you'll get a bunch of people saying, oh, this was hacked, as you did. The other thing, if they can get you to walk away from it, once it ages, they'll start selling access to it. And the organizations that buy access to accounts with large followings are going to be your disinformation groups, right? Mm-hmm. So if you've ever been kind of just chilling on, you know, doing the doom scroll on Twitter and all of a sudden came across this really just crazy, you know, tweet or on some other social media, but you're following this person and you don't know who they are or never met them before, that's generally how they happen. They got one of your friends to walk away from their account and then aged it and then sold it.
Right, which I wasn't willing to walk away. So I made another account really quickly and then started tweeting up a storm and started asking all my followers to report. And luckily, a lot of my friends mm-hmm. did. Yeah.
You know, I reported him for the DM and for all the tweets, the racist, awful things. Yeah. And the DM came back to me, this isn't offensive or whatever. This isn't spam.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think any of the things I reported came back positive. And I was so angry. I was like, what more do you need? Like, so annoying.
Yeah. Well, so I got a lot of weird fucking automated messages from Twitter as well. Like, we don't think this is a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, you assholes.
Yeah, sounds like you got stuck in automation hell there, right?
Yeah.
It was just being analyzed by an algorithm that's trained to pick out that one specific thing rather than look at the nuanced context.
I was like, that's my phone number. Fucking take it down, you idiots. But
that's what really scared me, is the phone number, and they were threatening to release like your parents' address or something
Okay, so what happened was then I guess he sold the account to another kid. I don't know. And so that I kept tweeting like, okay, now they changed the info to this. I like just mm-hmm. kept tweeting out the information, and that kid messaged or tweeted me, DM me. So I DM him and I'm like, hey, please give my account back. So I'm like, you know, whatever. I'll just ask. And then he threatened me. And I was like, ooh, that's dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, even I knew that was dumb. Because I was like, one, in the threat, you're admitting you have my account. And then two, you're threatening to dox me. So, okay. So I immediately screenshotted that. I sent it to Kevin. Kevin's like, don't engage any further. I stopped tweeting. I sent the screenshot of the email of the threat so it looked more, you know, real, of like, I got an email letting me know I got this DM on Twitter. And I sent that to like everyone who was reaching out to Twitter for me. And so the hack happened Thursday night, midnight. And then I had my Twitter back I got a random email from Twitter just being like, hey, you can update your password now, Sunday night. And I was like, is this my Twitter? And then I just logged in and I had it back, which I was like, what?
So what
was the final, was the threat the catalyst? Also, who of those people that I was interacting with was able to like break through to Twitter? Or was Twitter just like, oh, I don't know. Sure. Like, I have no idea. Because they also at one point, I kept reporting my Twitter, basically being like, this is me. This is me. And so they messaged me back, like, send us a photo of your ID. And then I sent a photo of my ID. And then they didn't say anything back.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, maybe that's a lost cause. They can't connect it because the emails aren't there or whatever. The information's not there anymore because they've changed it. But somehow, I don't know. I honestly don't know to this day what was the final catalyst to get them to be like, here's your Twitter back.
Yeah, you know, I reached out to a number of people I knew at Twitter as well.
Right.
I don't think we'll ever know. And I did some things that should have alarmed them. So I did some things. I had some communications pretending to, I won't say this pretending, but using
an alias
IP addresses outside of the US and some places that should have, you know, sparked interest with the people who had hacked your account. And I don't know whether that did anything or not. I think it's one of those things. You have a lot of support because you have iHeartRadio, you have a lot of contacts.
Yeah.
And you sent so many communications that, you were there waving your arms around and you got enough, momentum behind you, which is great. I mean, you kept fighting, which is exactly what you should do in these situations. The problem, as I see it, is imagine people who don't have as mm-hmm. much support as you do.
Right.
This happens all the time, unfortunately. I feel for the people who were hacked, and I also feel for the people work in the cybersecurity position, because this is happening at an overwhelming rate, and the people doing the cybersecurity investigations and everything, we just don't have enough of them in the world to make it effective, right? So that's why they have the algorithms, but it's hard to get past that, initial layer of algorithms to get a human on the line and have them listen to your story. But I'm glad whatever it was finally got through.
Yeah. No, you make a good point though. Like, it's really unfortunate. Like, how many people probably don't have the support or the reach, and they just can't do anything about it. And they probably just like keep screaming into a void, and then that's that. And like, maybe like those people can also be threatened and they don't know what else to do. They're like, I have no power here. So they just like let it go. But it's really a part of a bigger problem. And I mean, I guess my main question for you is like, are there steps that we can do to prevent it happening to us? I mean, other than the obvious things like making a complex password, because I think that's also like keystrokes on your computer, like the same ones will like, it's much easier than you think to get hacked, is what I'm trying to say, to have any password get hacked. So how do we protect ourselves out there?
Yeah, it is easy to get hacked. In cybersecurity, we say it's much easier to hack a human than it is a computer, right? So if mm-hmm. I can send an email, a phishing email to you and say, hey, this is Aunt Sally, click on this, link of cute puppies or something like that, or make an email that looks like Amazon asking for your credentials or something like that, and you plug them in and now I have them, right? So it's actually very surprisingly easy to get passwords. So one of the things I would recommend, if you're only going to stay at doing passwords, make sure that you use a password manager, which is a program that can be kind of a locker for all your passwords, and it can generate random passwords for you. So you're only ever interfacing with that locker, and mm-hmm. you only need to remember your login credentials for that locker, and it'll remember, 40 character, completely random letters and numbers for you. That's one good way, but the most effective way to protect yourself is to use multi-factor authentication. And multi-factor authentication is where you have to have two factors, and we define factors as something you know, something you are, or something you have. Something you know is a password. Something you have could be a token, or it could be a cell phone or something like that. And something you are is a biometric, right? Like a fingerprint reader or a facial recognition scan on your iPhone or something like that. So make sure, if you have the ability to, sign up for multi-factor authentication, where either the web service will send you a text message to your phone to prove that you have your phone, or maybe there's an authenticator app on your phone where you can log into that service, either using biometrics in your phone or using that app on your phone. So that's really the most number one key advice I could give around not having your accounts hacked.
Yeah, everything of mine is now two-factor, so I can feel safe. But I do the text option, but I really enjoy the authenticator app because it's so randomized. And I use two different ones, so all my stuff is split up between two. But I recommend...
It's called the authenticator app?
I use Google Authenticator and then another one, which I'm not going to say the name of.
Oh, I mean, sorry. I was just trying to give some tips.
Nice,
I mean,
try, Shireen.
I want to know for myself.
Joking.
Tell me off mic.
Well, you can use Google Authenticator app, I think, is a good one. The other one is just like really random, and it's connected to my work, so I'm just not going to talk about it. And it's not mainstream, so I don't really feel like there's a reason. But yeah, I think Google Authenticator app is great. It just basically like formulates random numbers like every, I think, minute, maybe less, that you use to input. I don't like the text one because I also read that like people can potentially like do something with your number. I don't know. I don't fully understand it. So I get scared with that one.
People can try to intercept the text and try to, you know, steal the text. It happens. It's not the biggest risk, I would say. It's far better to have it than not have it. But that is a risk associated with it. One of the pieces of advice, bonus advice I'd give you is if you're using an app like the Google Authenticator, look up how you can store the codes for recovering it. Because if you know, if your cell phone breaks or something like that, you might be up the creek without a paddle if you need to get a new cell phone and can't carry the app over.
Right. And something I notice is these apps, when you sign up for two-factor, they give you codes to screenshot and have put somewhere safe that you can access and log in with in case you either, you know, you're in a foreign country, your texts aren't working or whatever, like you said, you lose your phone. So I stored those in a secure location to have just screenshots in case. Well, so it gives you a bunch of numbers and the app says screenshot this. Because these are your recovery numbers in case all else fails. You use these to get in.
But will photos also have the potential to get hacked or not as often?
Well, I mean, I took those photos off my phone and then put them in my hard drive. And then
I see.
Okay, I literally like stored them somewhere and then also wrote them down on a piece of paper. And then put those deep into a cat. Well, I'm just telling everyone. Wait, never mind. Don't worry about where I put them.
So what I do is I talked about the password manager, and password manager is like an encrypted lockbox, a digital lockbox. And so I put them in there and then I don't save them on my hard drive or anything just in case I lose the computer or someone gets onto the computer. If password you are going to save it.
Manager.
Yeah. Password manager. Yeah. So I won't say any vendors. There is one vendor I like, but they're all good. But yeah, don't keep it. Don't keep it on anything that's connected to the internet or something that's easily lost. That's what I would recommend.
Yeah.
Let's take our last break and we will be right back.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And we're back with Kevin Ford. What a strong name you have, sir. Kevin Ford.
Yeah. my super white name. Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's a strong sense to it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think that's the first time anyone's ever told me that. You know, there are like a million Kevin Fords in the nation. So
you're the only one I know.
We all thank you for that compliment.
That's funny. Every Kevin Ford.
Like half of us are on the no-fly list. One of us got on it and now all of us get stopped coming back.
Yeah, I mean, welcome to the club, dude. Okay, yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say also you can easily just Google authenticator apps and then you can literally find ones that you would enjoy.
I know that, but I'm kind of untrusting. I feel like so many... Like, if you look at some listicles, for lack of a better word, I hate that word. But if you look at some of those things, sometimes there's, like, a reason why they're promoting one versus the other or something. I'm very untrusting. So I always go off of what people are actually using versus the internet. I don't trust the internet, is what I'm saying.
Probably a good policy.
Right. I mean, that's what we're all doing here. But I will ask you both off mic what you personally use, just because I need to get that insider user application. Like, I want to know what my friends are doing.
I recommend doing it for everything. I've done it. I've set it up for truly everything. Like, you can't, it takes me like 20 minutes to log into everything, it feels like. Like, all my apps have it. My email, all social media I use has it. And you also, like, some of these places, like, I didn't even know Twitter had it, like, two-factor authentication, because they kind of hide it under, like, a few tabs. So you really have to look for it. So I recommend, mm-hmm. like, really clicking through to find this option. It's usually under security or privacy or whatever under your account settings. But, like, they should make it more known. I feel like I didn't even realize.
But I don't think it's in their interest, you know, like that's the thing that I was, maybe I'm too much of a untrusting weirdo, but I just really, I mean, I know it's not all a cap. I mean, no, it is. In my opinion, it is a capitalist scam, but I think if their priority was to protect their users or consumers or whatever, it would be something that they advertise a lot. It would be something that they implemented a lot of activity in, you know? Like, I just think it's not really a priority of theirs. It's not a priority of the vast majority of social media apps. Like, look at Instagram, makes it so easy just to hand over your credit card information and buy things. Like, I think it's just not, they're interested in making it as easy as possible for you to use their app and maybe spend money on the app in case of Instagram. So I don't know.
So speaking as a cybersecurity person, I'd much rather you have, and from a corporate mindset or from, you know, government mindset, I'd much rather you have protection in place, because it's much more expensive for me to respond to a security incident than it is for me to prevent a security incident. So, you know, I think it is good business to do it. Now, I can't speak for social media or any real company right now around, you know, what they're doing to market it and enforce it. You know, it is my hope that in the future that multi-factor authentication will become kind of a mandatory thing almost everywhere. I know it's starting to become mandatory with banks, mm-hmm. with a lot of financial services. But yeah, hey, if you're listening, social media, make it mandatory.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I'll give credit to Google. Like, they always remind you sometimes when you change your password, when you log in, they'll be like, if you don't have it set up, they'll be like, hey, do you want to set this up? Like, do you want to do a privacy checkup or whatever this shit, you know? So I do, there are companies that are huge, like Google, that do at least push that initiative. So that's not all lost, like you said. Like, there's a little bit heading in the right direction. I think I just made the same mistake of like assuming that the only things get hacked are social media accounts, but no, it's banks, it's your email, it's things that have information that people can use for other reasons. You know, you don't have to just be verified on Twitter with a four-letter handle to get hacked. You can just be someone that has an email account, you know? I don't know.
Wait, you're not allowed to have four-letter handles anymore?
No, I think it just means it's rare.
Yeah, they just all got used up. There are only so many of them.
Oh. Yeah, it's like as if it's like if you claim Anna immediately, you know what I mean? It's like it's so you have to be like right there, right then. It's like like Kareem Rahma, previous guest of the show, he said that he has Kareem on Instagram and everyone's always asked him, like, how do you have this handle? There are a million Kareems out there. And it's just like, I don't know. I signed up on the day and I'm never letting this handle go. So it's like that kind of vibe, I think. Right? Is that what you kind of meant?
Yeah. And I'm like, on everything in social media, if I use my name, I'm like Kevin Ford, like 1,437,000 mm-hmm. or something like that. Right. So yeah, it was kind of, I guess they want that first wave of four character, you know, handles, that because right now you can only get them by hacking them. So it mm-hmm. kind of proves that, hey, I hack this.
Or
it turns out you can actually just go buy it. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You always see a celebrity with like a small handle, like Meg or something. You're like, how did this happen? It's just like, oh, money.
Yeah.
So you helped me, Kevin, put together a report, which I found fascinating because you went so deep, you figured out like everything about this guy. And at one point you asked if I wanted to give him a message before you basically, whatever, imploded him. And I never did because I was like, it feels like I shouldn't. But Shireen, I'm curious if you had a message like in a situation like that, what do you think you would tell them? I couldn't think of anything. I was like, what am I going to be like? Sayonara, sucker. I don't know.
I mean, I'm incredibly petty.
Says something badass.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not cool enough.
I'm incredibly petty. So I do think I would take the option of a message, a final message. I mean, I'm not that petty. I mean, whatever. Yeah, I'm petty. But I don't know. I guess it would have to go. It would depend on what they hacked, what they did. But I guess if I was in your situation, if I'm pretending I'm you in the situation, I don't know what I would say. Everything I'm coming up with is so corny.
I mean, I didn't end up choosing anything because I was like, I feel like I shouldn't.
You know, well, I guess you shouldn't provoke them. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Like, I didn't want him to realize really like it was me, but at the same time, it's kind of like, it'd be pretty cool if I was like, fuck you.
I think it's good that you shouldn't provoke them. You shouldn't be petty. I'm not an aspiring figure to be like, but so you shouldn't be petty and you shouldn't provoke them. And I also think like back to what you said earlier about he was trying to fund his, like, in his world, like, his dreams, his passions. Like, you know, like, he was just trying to use the tools that he had to defend for himself.
Don't humanize this little bitch. Don't humanize him. Fuck that guy.
I'm not saying he's a good person. I'm saying most hackers aren't good people. I just think they're desperate. And, I mean, yeah, I guess I'm, like, humanizing him a little bit because from what you told me, he was, like, kind of young and dumb. And
I don't know if he was dumb, but The guy that eventually took over my account, because they post their link trees in the bio, so you're like, cool, I know everything about you. But his other Twitter account, like, he was just tweeting like, man, I hate school. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, you know, there's nothing more infuriating than watching a child complaining about the fact that he has to go to school, but he also has access to your Twitter account. You're like, you motherfuckers.
But to that point, knowing that they're that kind of, like, he's like a kid or like immature or whatever, I think provoking them would make them even worse. So I think in that case, not provoking them, not giving a final message is probably preferred. But to be funny, if you did want to provoke them, I think sayonara, sucker, it's up there on my list.
That was just, I imagine, like me throwing a grenade or something, like a war movie.
right under hasta la vista.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
Maybe I would say Allahu Akbar just to be.
Oh, that's a good one. That's scary because a lot of people just assume it means like straight up terrorism.
Yeah, but really it just means like, I love you, God.
So Shireen, you brought up an interesting point. If I could just kind of double back, and not to humanize these people, but from a policy perspective, and it's not just true of cybercrime, but you know, poverty does drive crime here a little bit, particularly in the cyber world. If you know, right now we think of a cyber villain as some kid in a hoodie in their mom's basement, just, you know, being a jerk to people. But, you know, you can go to developing countries and find entire call centers devoted to frauding people, right?
Yeah.
That's what they can do for money. And so there's also kind of an equity solution to cybercrime here too, that I think needs to be explored that hasn't been explored largely.
That's a good point. And I don't want to sound like I'm defending them in any way or playing devil's advocate, but the same way that cyberbullies forget that there's a human on the other side, I think realizing that the hacker on the other side is just like, I'm just infinitely curious about their motivations and their reasonings behind it. Like, I know a lot of them just like want to prove that they can do something. It's like a game, and hacking is probably really fun and stuff in their world, you know, just like it's a competitive thing. And on the flip side, like, I didn't realize he was trying to fund his own, like, he was just trying to do some, like, use the tools provided to him, however shitty they were, to improve his life in his own way. So human motivation is constantly fascinating to me, and yeah, hacking is no exception, I suppose. But
yeah, well, to flip the narrative, this was some kid in his mom's basement messing around with people, so don't feel too bad for him.
I mean, sometimes I guess the stereotypes do themselves.
If there was one thing I probably would have loved to have done, if it was possible, was to go speak to his mother. Be like, hi, your son.
That would be fun.
Hi, your son has hacked me and posted some very vulgar language on my Twitter. I don't know where he learned this. That would be the dream. If I had been able, if he lived in this country near me, I would have gone to his parents' home and complained. And
that would be a
great choice.
That would have been a fun way to be like, and fuck you, you fucking little kid. I swear to God, I'm going to get you grounded.
I mean, the same way that, like, when those racist videos come out and people are like, where does this person work? Where, whatever. I think giving them actual consequences for their actions that actually mess up their situation, I mean, that's the best revenge, you know? They're going to keep doing whatever they're doing if there's no real consequence. So yeah, if we had access to his mom, kick him out, mom. Let him fend for himself. Why is he in your basement? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's who I like imagined hacked me.
Really?
I don't know. I just didn't feel like the way they were talking felt so like immature. And
yeah,
he was very immature. Even the way when I started looking into his infrastructure, you know, the communications he had with his friends, it was you know, he was just some edgelord punk that was being, you know. But there is, you know, there is good news here, right? We did actually bring down the majority of his infrastructure all in one shot.
I didn't do anything. That's all you.
But it's not often that you get that gratifying a resolution to these sorts of things. Generally, you just send something away to, you know, either the Twitter or the company whose account, you know, you have that's been impacted, and just hope they resolve it. It's very rare that you actually get to go after the bad guys and take down their infrastructure. So that was
It must have been a little gratifying, at least on your end, Anna, to know that
definitely,
like, you found out they weren't this anonymous cloaked weirdo. They probably were regardless.
I mean, it was nice to know the idea that Kevin was like working was like very comforting, because I was like,
yeah,
at least I know someone is getting justice in a way, even if it is just like, you know, screwing over their infrastructure, which is what they know. And I am curious, like, how did they end up like reacting in the end? Was he just like, everything you sent me, they were just like, oh no, something's down, sad face emoji. And I'm like, feel more. Like, aren't you more upset? Why is everyone speaking so chill? I don't know. I'm not in that world, so I don't know.
Yeah, there was one server that I left up just to kind of monitor reactions, and they, you know, I didn't send you a lot of the conversations. I just didn't think it was productive or appropriate, right? I mean, there were even criminals have some human rights, I guess, right? I kind of feel that broadly. So I didn't want to be too, you know, spy on them. I just wanted to get the information that was important for the investigation and for targeting the right things. So they, you know, they definitely were a little upset about having so many of their servers get taken down. And the best part of it was that we did it all. It happened all at once, right? If you do it, you know, you do one, then the other, they just jump between server to server. But if you do it all at once, you disrupt their ability to communicate and kind of reconvalesce as a hive mind, So
I mean, dumb question, but when you say servers, again, I don't know anything about this, but like, is this like on the dark web? Like where are these servers?
So there were some dark web elements to it. That was certainly part of the community, but a lot of this was also happening on Discord. So I was able to contact some people I knew there and get it kind of directly taken down and coordinate something there. The dark web stuff, unfortunately, is still up. And then there are actually some websites that are just devoted to these hacker communities. Now I filed reports with them, with their web hosts and their domain authorities. But those are typically very slow to get down. So the majority of the stuff we pulled down was Discord. There were some other things that were being hosted that actually helped them with the hacking process that we were also able to get down. But unfortunately, there are some still up the kind of the main communities that do this, and they're just operating right in the open.
I guess my last question is, you're hacking a hacker. Is it like for you, this is your job. You've done this for decades, over like almost two decades, it sounds like. Or what do you say? 25? How many years? You've done it for a long time.
Yeah, for a long time. Yeah. A bunch of years. Just to clear that up, there's some confusion as to what counted early on as, cybersecurity versus information security and that sort of stuff.
I'm just curious, was it easy for you personally as someone in this job, in this lifestyle? Like, how hard is it to hack a hacker? Like, was it something that, like, does the hacker have all of these things in place to prevent you from hacking them? Or are they, like, I don't know. Does that make sense? Like, I want to know what your process was like and how difficult it was for you to get behind their wall.
Yes. The answer is super easy. It's not true of everyone or every hacker out there or every group, right? A lot of these groups are actually nation state actors, right? Or organized crime, which have very sophisticated infrastructure and facilities, which is very difficult. And that's kind of in my main job, that's kind of what I'm generally, trying to protect people from. But in this, I always like doing this because it's kind of, I won't say it's the petty stuff, but it gives me a lot of, recourse to feel good, because in these ones, this is the one where I can generally like get in their community and spy on them and see the reaction as we, as we take down their infrastructure and that sort of stuff. These guys are what we call in the business script kiddies. Which means that they're not actually super technical at all. What they do is they have a program that someone built them. And so they know how to run the program and find different accounts that are easily hackable, and the program will guess passwords and that sort of stuff. So they're not super technical. These guys didn't go in through like Twitter's servers and change credentials and that sort of stuff. They just guessed.
I mean, yeah, I assumed it was a low level thing, especially because they were kind of on the younger side and whatever. Mm-hmm. I assumed it was like a low level kind of knowledge, but still fascinating. And the last thing I'll say about this is, like, I do really appreciate that you were there to help Anna. I really she told me during the whole process, like, this one guy is like really helping me feel sane throughout this whole thing. I'm so glad he's in my corner kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate your help. And I also appreciate something that you said briefly about how you still respect these people's privacy, because you're not going to take advantage of just like being able to spy on them, because I think the majority of people would. The majority of people would kind of take advantage of having an inside look into anyone's life, because it's like kind of fascinating and just to be like almost like a peeping Tom on the internet kind of vibe, you know? So I do appreciate that, knowing that you work in this field, you have that mentality. It's very refreshing and reassuring to me. So thank you.
Yeah. It's a code of ethics that keeps us, it maintains the difference between us and them, honestly,
sure.
The good guys and the bad guys. And once that starts getting blurry, then it's,
then you're just as bad.
That's all. Yeah. So
then you have to turn in your white hat.
That's right. I have to turn in my white hat for a gray hat or a black hat.
Yeah.
I like that metaphor. There's something scary about it. I don't know why, but the idea of like a white hat hacker, like I imagine like clip art where it's like a shadowed man with like a trench coat and a fedora like hat. And then you're
like, is
that
the kind of hat? I was going to ask, what kind of hat do you imagine when you say white hat, black hat?
Oh, God. It's so.
Fedora,
it's so cliche,
cowboy,
but it, yes, it is. No, Anna Paquin, right? Yeah. It's that dude
it's,
who
it's,
maybe
you know what it is, the neighborhood watch guy.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Everyone trying to pull off like the Humphrey Bogart, but yes, actually they're just exactly. pulling off. They're actually just pulling off like cringy
yes.
old dude,
just like scary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you go to the conventions, you see people dressed up like that. And I'm like, I'm staying away from you.
So, that is funny. They're so like, strange. I'm a hacker. Like, yeah, what?
I cosplay hacker.
Yeah. That is so strange.
That is interesting. We had to do like a phishing scam training at work. And they have all these like really silly images within the training video. And it's like, don't get hacked. And it's like a guy wearing a ski mask while on a computer. And I'm like, I don't think they need to wear a ski mask if you're hacking people. But I just think it's the imagery of what people paint of like, I'm a hacker. I'm wearing a ski mask just in case you can see me hacking your computer. And it's like, it's actually more terrifying than that. The imagery almost makes it like funny, but no. When some weird kid is like, hey, stop pointing out that I hacked your Twitter or else. And you're like, oh, like truly, like I was like, where are your parents, you disturbing little boy? Like, I was like, what? Ooh, what? It's I don't know. It like kind of shook me to my core while simultaneously at this point, I had already known this person was young because they linked their other Twitter account with their where they're complaining about how school sucks. And I'm like, oh, my God. I can't imagine as a child, like, having that sort of nerve to, like,
shameless.
Threaten someone and be like, I'll release your address. Like, what?
Yeah,
it's scary.
That's wild.
It's scary. I was like, I need to call your mother. I don't know what to say to you. But, yes. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing the knowledge.
Yeah, I know. Truly, like, I think tell people where they can follow you, where they can learn more information, just anything you want to promote, please do it.
Well, let me give a shout out to the state of North Dakota. Love you guys. You're great. if you want more information around cybersecurity and what you can do, go to the website defend.nd.gov. That's a website we've set up for citizens, and on it you can get some tips around cybersecurity. You can also sign up to take a personal assessment to see if you're cyber secure generally, or what you can do to improve cybersecurity beyond the things I've kind of mentioned here today, and also see some cool hacking videos. So that's really neat too. Yeah, we'll show you.
Is the neighborhood watch guy in them?
Yeah, the neighborhood watch guys are in them. we're all sitting around wearing fedoras.
That's actually hilarious.
Yeah. If you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter is KFHacks, H-A-X. And this might be a first for your show. If you want to follow me on LinkedIn, it's Kevin Ford CS.
That is a first. That is a first. You weren't the first white guy, but you were the first LinkedIn
the
guy.
First LinkedIn. There we go. I've gone all the way down the rabbit hole.
That's interesting. LinkedIn, huh? Sorry, what was the website?
Defend.nd.gov.
Yep. ND. Great. I'm gonna link all this below so you guys can check it out in the description. And
until next time,
yourself.
Fucking set up two-factor authentication on everything.
Don't be me. Don't get threatened by kids who've stolen your Twitter. Be not like me in that sense, but be like me in protecting yourself to the extreme now.
Thank you again, Kevin. That was so informative, and I've learned a lot. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen, Shirohiro on Instagram, and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnier on Twitter. Nice to say that again. Got my Twitter account back. I guess follow me on there.
Yeah, follow us. Follow along the journey. And follow Kevin. And and go to defend.nb.gov. Protect yourself. It's important in sex and the internet. And the car. Protecting yourself everywhere. Wear your seatbelts. Anyways, I'm going to shut up now. Go change your passwords.
Go change your passwords and go look for two-factor authenticator within security slash privacy in your settings and turn it on and then feel better. Feels more secure. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.